Today is Friday, May the 15th, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. The Crisis of the Starmer Government, the Labour Party, and British Capitalism by Thomas Scripps. Britain has entered a new stage of political crisis. Labour leader Keir Starmer's premiership is on the verge of collapse. Shaken by resignations and no-confidence letters, including from the arch-Blairite Health Secretary Wes Streeting, and now awaits the final trigger for an open leadership challenge. To mount a socialist response, workers and young people must look past the media psychodrama that reduces politics to soap opera and personality clashes, and focus instead on the underlying realities driving the crisis. The Starmer government's crisis is the outcome of two intertwined long-term processes: the global decline of British imperialism amid the convulsions of world capitalism, and the complete collapse of the Labour Party's working-class constituency. In the nearly 30 years from 1979 to 2007, Britain had only three prime ministers, two of them, Margaret Thatcher for the Conservatives and Tony Blair for Labour, served continuous 10-year terms. Since then, in less than 20 years, Britain has churned through seven prime ministers, with four, and now potentially five, coming in just the last 4 years. In every case, the fall of a British Prime Minister has been precipitated by an international shock that exposed the brittleness of British imperialism's global position, and in doing so sharpened domestic class antagonisms at home. Gordon Brown's premiership was finished by the 2008 financial crash, as Labour bailed out the banks and opened the door to a new era of austerity. David Cameron was driven from office after the Brexit referendum, which was fuelled by austerity and which plunged the British economy into turmoil and threw the UK's foreign policy into crisis. The domino departures of Boris Johnson, Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak, all leaders of the Conservative Party, ultimately reflected the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and the US-NATO war against Russia in Ukraine. Both exposed the extreme vulnerability of British capitalism, while the war placed demands on British imperialism and militarism, which none of these figures was considered by the ruling class to be capable of managing. The Conservatives were given repeated chances to resolve the crisis because the Blairite Labour Party combined a ruthless commitment to suppressing social opposition with an unpopularity so profound that for years it could not mount a credible electoral challenge. And when millions embraced the prospect of a left alternative to Blairism, Jeremy Corbyn, elected on that promise, responded by capitulating to the right wing of the party, disarming his supporters and systematically sabotaging any serious fight back throughout his 5 years as Labour leader. Starmer ultimately came to power in what the media aptly characterised as a loveless landslide, delivered a huge majority on an unprecedentedly low share of the vote thanks to the disgust with the Tories and Britain's undemocratic electoral system. Now he has been capsized by the shockwaves of the war in Iran and President Donald Trump's detonation of the special relationship between the US and the UK. Britain's ruling class is caught in a tightening vice. On one side is a brutal price shock, with food costs projected to end the year 50-64% higher than in mid-2021, and soaring fuel costs squeezing working-class families and battering industry. On the other is the demand for a massive rearmament drive, what one senior government advisor, quoted in the Financial Times, called a rude wake-up call for the country's underinvestment in its military. Once again, amid deepening popular hatred of Starmer's government and its rapid electoral collapse, the Labour left is playing the decisive role in clearing the ground for the crisis to be settled entirely among a gang of right-wing Blairites in disarray. John McDonnell, former Shadow Chancellor under Corbyn, speaks for Labour's ever-diminishing socialist campaign group in calling for an orderly transition, with the aim of preempting any attempt by the working class to seize the initiative through strikes and protests. The trade union bureaucracy has counselled, likewise, stating that it's clear that the Prime Minister will not lead Labour into the next election, and at some stage a plan will have to be put in place for the election of a new leader. Corbyn has plumed new depths in his efforts to drain away political opposition. His campaign to abort the Your Party initiative for a left of Labour Party, which gathered a mailing list of over 800,000 in a matter of days last year, has been entirely successful. A party in name only, it fielded just 20 candidates in recent local elections and backed 50 in over 5,000 contests. In every crisis of rule suffered by the British capitalist class, as its global position has weakened, the dictates of international finance and the requirements of militarism have asserted themselves ever more directly and nakedly. Vastly more column inches and far more anonymous briefings from Labour insiders are devoted to addressing the wishes of the bond markets than of the population when it comes to a potential new Prime Minister. Kathleen Brooks, Research Director for investment company XTB, put the matter bluntly. The UK still has the highest borrowing costs of any G7 member, and our yields have risen at the fastest rate since the Middle East war started, until a challenge from the left of the Labour Party is eradicated, or the government embarks on growth-positive economic policy. We do not see UK bond yields substantially falling from here. On the military front, whoever is the Labour Prime Minister for the rest of this Parliament is expected to reverse the prolonged decline of the British armed forces by shifting billions from welfare spending to war. These demands are incompatible with even the most minimal social programmes. The absurdly mislabelled soft left leadership, hopefuls, Andy Burnham and Angela Rayner, have already begun the required pilgrimages to corporate headquarters, offering up whatever scraps of socially minded rhetoric may have escaped their list in the past. Global finance, they reassure, will have the final say. The Labour Party is not merely pressured by these forces. Having severed any remaining connection to its former working class constituency, it is a political instrument of the corporate and financial oligarchy, body and soul. So much so that it is now the preferred party among higher managerial, administrative and professional occupations, according to a YouGov survey conducted in January. Labour's support falls with household income. It claims just 17% of the voting intentions of those in intermediate occupations, and just 14% of those in routine and manual occupations. In both, it is dwarfed by the far-right Reform, 29 and 39% respectively, and soundly beaten by the Tories, 23 and 17%. Among voters under 35 who recoil at the nationalism, xenophobia and conservative social norms of Reform and the Tories, the Green Party far outscores Labour, which has taken up swathes of the right's anti-migrant agenda. Starmer and his possible successor lead a hollowed-out party with no popular constituency, responding only to the dictates of the banks and major corporations. Labour can only fully comply with these demands through a ruthless assault on the living standards of the working class to improve Britain's international economic competitiveness and fund remilitarisation. Starmer has barely begun this process and is tasked with either accelerating it or stepping aside for someone who will. The Times sets the tone, denouncing Starmer for a legacy that has reflected the worst aspects of old Labour: the highest tax burden for 80 years, soaring welfare spending, job-destroying employment legislation, and an exodus of the rich. And just for good measure, he has failed to stop the boats and stem the tide of anti-Semitism, which is code for opposition to Israel. The social implications of these diktats are indicated by the planned deployment by the London Metropolitan Police of 4,000 officers, drones, enhanced stop and search powers, and armoured vehicles at a pro-Palestinian protest this weekend, on the pretext of potential clashes with a far-right demonstration. Protesters have been threatened with immediate arrest for using the word Intifada. In less than 2 years, the Starmer-led government has fully confirmed the Socialist Equality Party's assessment on the day of his election, that a new reactionary monster has been installed at the head of a Labour government on a collision course with the British working class. It has also confirmed the SEP's total opposition to the policy of lesser evilism advanced by the pseudo-left in 2024. The call to vote Labour, save in a handful of constituencies, the Socialist Workers' Party-led Together Alliance with its lineup of capitalist parties, and later attempts to corral discontent behind projects like Your Party or the Revolutionary Communist Party's promotion of the Greens, they amount to new configurations of the same Labourite politics, different wrappers for the same pro-capitalist program of austerity at home, militarism abroad, and suppression of working-class resistance. 100 years ago, in the run-up to the general strike of 1926, Leon Trotsky wrote of Britain's abrupt and continuously declining world role. Quote, "This irreversible process also creates a revolutionary situation. The British bourgeoisie, compelled as it is to make its peace with America, to retreat, to tack, and to wait, is filling itself with the greatest bitterness, which will reveal itself in terrible forms in a civil war." Trotsky warned in this context that the whole of the present-day superstructure of the British working class, in all its shades and groupings without exception, represents a breaking mechanism on the revolution. Unquote. Labour and the trade union bureaucracy proved in their actions Trotsky's point. The opportunist line imposed on the Communist Party of Great Britain by the Stalinist faction in the Comintern, glorifying the trade union lefts and preserving the political authority of the Trades Union Congress, smothered the struggle to build an independent revolutionary movement. The result was to grant the ruling class time and space to pursue its own solutions to the crisis of British capitalism. Wage cuts, the mass impoverishment of the Great Depression, and the drive to militarism that culminated in the Second World War. Trotsky emphasised that the chief break upon the British Revolution is the false, diplomatic masquerade leftism, which is always ready not only for retreats but also for betrayal. As in 1926, so in 2026, today's lefts, Jeremy Corbyn and company, are the frontline defenders and supportive props of the politics of the Labour Party against the radicalising mood of the working class. They are what must be exposed and defeated to build a new and genuinely socialist leadership. Anger spreads after strike by 42,000 UC California workers cancelled in the middle of the night. By Max Jones, Kimmy Saito, and Joshua Rodriguez. 42,000 University of California healthcare and service workers were set to begin a historic open-ended strike on Thursday, May 14th. Custodians, patient care technicians, respiratory therapists, food service workers, and others had voted overwhelmingly to strike against poverty wages, skyrocketing housing costs, and the inadequate healthcare. Workers in Local 3299 have been kept on the job without a contract since 2024. Then, in the dead of night, the strike was abruptly called off at approximately 1:26 a.m. Thursday morning, and workers were ordered to report to work only hours later. The American Federation of State, County and Municipal Employees, the AFSCME, Local 3299, announced it reached a tentative agreement behind closed doors with the University of California administration. This is the latest in a series of sellouts by union bureaucrats across the country. In particular, it is almost identical to the way that SEIU blocked a district-wide strike of 77,000 Los Angeles public school workers in April, with only hours to go before their strike deadline, following all-night talks involving LA Mayor Karen Bass. The same week, the SEIU cancelled a strike of 34,000 building workers in New York City shortly before it was set to begin. Also at the UC system, the United Auto Workers, the UAW, suppressed a 93.3% strike mandate by 40,000 academic workers after their contract expired in March, ultimately pushing through a ratified agreement without ever allowing a strike. The union bureaucracy is deliberately sabotaging workers in order to prevent a struggle, which would inevitably develop into a broader fight which would threaten their ties to management and the Democratic Party. A general rule is emerging. The more favourable the objective conditions for a struggle, the more shamelessly the bureaucracy acts to disrupt and dissipate workers' momentum. Workers should not consider themselves bound to a deal made in flagrant violation of their will and reached when they were still asleep. To override this betrayal, workers must organise rank-and-file committees at every campus and UC facility, excluding union officials, to mobilise workers to vote down the deal and prepare a genuine struggle, this time under workers' control. The full tentative agreement has not been released to the membership, underscoring the undemocratic character of the manoeuvre. Voting will begin as soon as Monday, leaving little to no time to read the full text of the deal. That is, if it is even circulated by then. So far, workers have only been provided the so-called highlights from the union apparatus. AFSCME boasts that we won on its website, claiming that historic wins were obtained, but even the highlights point instead to a historic sellout. The agreement includes a $1,500 lump sum payment, a 5% wage increase retroactive to 2025, and promises to increase minimum wage to $25 in 2025, $26.50 in 2026, reaching $30.10 by April 2029. In fact, administrators had already agreed to a 5% pay increase and $25 starting pay. But the claim that this means livable wages is an outright lie. According to Massachusetts Institute of Technology's Living Wage Calculator, a single adult in California with one child needs to earn at least $53.54 per hour to make ends meet. Moreover, because the wage increases is only retroactive to 2025, this means workers will get no wage increases for the final months of 2024, when the last contract expired. The next 4 years would see base wage increases of 6% in 2026, 5% in 2027, and 4% each in 2028 and 2029, for a total of 24% over the 5-year contract. This is only 6% better than the 18% over 5 years from UC's last, best, and final offer. In 2024, AFSCME's initial demand was for 25% over 3 years. The AFSCME likewise claims it has secured affordable health care, but in fact the deal allows for rate increases of either 7.5% or 5% per year, depending on the plan. They claim it includes safe staffing, but there are no detailed enforcement mechanisms, no concrete staffing ratios, and no binding prohibitions on layoffs or outsourcing. But worst of all, the final deal omits entirely the original demand for $25,000 in housing subsidies per employee. This is a crucial issue, given that the spiraling cost of living crisis in California has left some workers living in their cars. Its absence, combined with healthcare cost increases, likely more than offsets the modest concessions management gave on wages. AFS-CME officials never intended to wage a genuine struggle against the financial interests of the UC regents, the Democratic Party establishment, or the capitalist system, which subordinates healthcare and education to profit. Their function is not to mobilise workers independently, but to contain and suppress opposition within safe channels acceptable to management and the state. On AFS-CME Local 3299's Instagram page, workers were furious. "What happened to all that talk about retro pay? The housing? We won't stop until we win," asked one worker, throwing the union's rhetoric back in its face. Another wrote, "This is disheartening and disappointing. I really thought we would get the housing funds. The talking they did was very misleading. They made it seem like they would not fold unless they gave us the housing funds." A third worker demanded, "Where is the retro pay? Just another big error, right? Inflation wasn't a worry, I guess, for the ones working for you all." World Socialist website reporters were on the ground speaking to workers at UC Irvine Thursday morning following the announcement. Andrew, a groundskeeper at UC Irvine with 9 years on the job, explained that most of the workers are working two jobs, he said. "You can't make it on one. Maybe they'll do another landscaping job after this." Compounding this is the struggle to afford housing. Andrew said last year there were actually some people living out of their cars because they could not afford the rent. You know, you're working full-time at a university and you're living out of your car. Andrew explained to WSWS reporters, "Whenever they do give us a raise, it's really not a raise, because it's already sucked up by the insurance costs and the parking." UC workers are forced to pay nearly $1,000 annually for parking, while healthcare costs continue to rise. When a WSWS reporter described the agreement as effectively a net zero contract, Andrew replied, "It balances out somewhere. It balances out for them, not for us." Adolfo, a groundskeeper with 19 years at UC Irvine, said, "The issue of the pay is very important because everything is going up and up, year after year. The price of gasoline is rising, food as well. Actually, the price of everything is going up." Adolfo noted that many work second or even third jobs. "Yes, it's necessary. It's just not enough money. The rent for one apartment now is $3,000. That's only for the apartment. Then you have to pay for food, utilities, phones, cars, tires, gasoline. And I have children." With each contract, he said, the workers are just getting poorer. Another groundskeeper with nearly 30 years at UC Irvine told WSWS reporters that he is still making only $25 an hour. "The first step for workers is to organise rank-and-file committees against the sham ratification process. They should demand the full tentative agreement be released immediately, with adequate time for workers to read and discuss it before a vote. Workers must impose rank-and-file oversight of the balloting to ensure its integrity. The struggle must be resumed under workers' control. AFS-CME members should organise meetings to decide on their own non-negotiable demands and prepare the ground for mass action to win them, with or without the permission of the union apparatus. This struggle must be based on a strategy of class struggle. Workers are being told there is no money for housing, staffing, or wages, while hundreds of billions are funneled into criminal wars. Trump recently declared with utter contempt that he does not think even a little bit about the economic impact of the war on tens of millions of Americans. But the attack on the working class is bipartisan. The Democrats who run California, and who also make up the UC regents, have overseen brutal austerity, while refusing to do anything to hold Trump accountable in the slightest for his fascist policies. The struggle is not simply against the UC administration, but against an entire political and economic system that subordinates human need to private profit. For these articles and more today, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been John Davis.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.